Welcome to The Sober Effect, a show that looks at the positives of sobriety, the dangers of alcohol, and the many people who are affected by it. I'm Kate.
And I'm Steph. The ripple effect of alcohol is far-reaching, and those are the stories you'll hear on The Sober Effect. So, today's guest has been sober for 10 years. And I know, Kate, you and I have talked about that. It's just remarkable when we meet people who have been sober for that long. It's like to me, and I don't say this in like a negative, like they're like an elder. I don't mean like, because he's our age, but I mean like, as far as sobriety, you just want to sit and talk, right? Because you just want to hear how great it's been or like things they've accomplished and things like that. So I have a question for you to kind of start this out. Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
I see myself as a much more mature person. I feel like I've been catching up these last 2 years and finding my feet and getting my balance and kind of getting my confidence back on par. And I just know where I am, but now I want to start building it. And we'll talk about this, won't we? Because this second year has been a bit different to the first one, but I feel like as I move on, my focus won't be on sobriety because that's just become part of my way of living. So apart from these podcasts and a few random posts on social media, I'm moving forward in the other areas of my life. So for me, I think I will have taken some big steps and changed what I do for my career, my family situation. I'd really like to move abroad again, things like that. So I'm quite excited about it. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely sober and confident. I feel confident already, but I feel like there's still room to grow in that. And I say that because, especially around alcohol, I have no desire to drink. But what I'm looking forward to, and Gary, who we talked to today, kind of inspired me or made me feel like, okay, this is possible, like to get to this point. I want to be able to have alcohol around me and not have like this, I don't know how to describe it, because it's kind of like this, I don't know if it's anger. I don't know if it's like resentment towards alcohol. I don't like it being around me, but there's no way to avoid that. Like, let's be honest, people are going to drink around us. That's something I have a really hard time with. And it's like I said, it's not because it triggers me to drink. It's because I'm so disappointed in what alcohol does to people.
Yeah.
It's so hard to describe how it makes me feel inside when I'm watching people over consume it and glamorize it and like romanticize it and try to make it look like it's so much fun. And I'm sitting there just like, I just want to scream like, what are you doing? You know, but I know that like that situation is not where you do that, you know, like, and I would never do that anyway. So I would love to get to a point, I guess, where I'm just unbothered when it's around me.
It's like watching an accident about to happen and knowing you can prevent it, but knowing you're not allowed to intervene. It's kind of, it's really hard. It's really hard to watch it when we now hate alcohol and we've seen what it's done to us and to friends. And then to watch people drink it who you care about is really hard. I think you've explained it perfectly though. And I think disappointed is a really good word to describe it. And frustration at how it is glamorized. It's just, it's really off-putting. And it puts you off people who you normally really like and you're around them and you're like, oh, I know this is just going to be annoying. I leave. I mean, I'm different. I don't mind being around alcohol and I haven't from the start, but maybe that's because I was living with someone who was drinking for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I had to be okay with it when I made my decision because I knew he wasn't going to stop as well. So I kind of went into it through a different door. So I immediately had to. So I just sort of dealt with it and it didn't matter who it was, but I am never around drunk people now. I leave.
Yeah.
It's just not, I don't like it.
I try my best not to be. One example, because it's really fresh. We just went to a wedding last weekend and it was like, I just wanted to run out of there. You know, like you just slowly watch. You watch the table fill up with empty beer cans and you just watch everyone around you, like their eyes start getting heavy. And the conversation went from everyone, you know, because we were at a table with people where it was kind of like my husband's, because it was a guy that worked for him that got married. So they put us all at a table together. And of course, there was a lot of us that didn't know each other. So you notice in the beginning without the alcohol, you know, everyone's just kind of like small talk, like it's kind of awkward.
Polite, kind, and then interested.
It's like, yeah. And then all of a sudden it just turns and people are just like talking about weird, random things and they're slurring.
Oversharing.
Yeah. And I'm like, to be the only sober one and you're sitting there and you're watching that or I observe like people going, oh, I'm going to go get another one. Do you want another one? And everyone just says yes. And then I'll see like one wife look at her husband. She's like, I still kind of have a full one. And he's like, that's fine. Just let them get you another one, you know, and people are getting backed up and other people are drinking faster than others. Like, I just observe all that. And I want to get to a point where I'm not observing that anymore. That's what I look forward to. And yeah. I know that I will. Like, I really do believe that I will get to that point. But for now, it's just one of those things. Like, it just irks me.
But do you think you might stop being in those situations less because you're not going to make new friends who are heavy drinkers?
True.
So your friends now who know you probably don't drink heavily around you when it's just you.
Right.
The people you meet aren't going to. And yeah. It's very rare you go to things like this.
True.
And I think everything changes, doesn't it? And we, mm-hmm. without realizing it, we make decisions that will help us avoid that. Because although I can be around it, the thought of sitting in a pub tonight mm-hmm. and being around drunk people is I would much rather just go to bed. And I never thought I'd say that.
Me neither.
But it's good. And I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to not being ashamed or embarrassed about things, you know? And that took a lot of recovery. And I'm realizing now how much of my brain I used up on feeling guilty. And that's gone. And there's so much more space, so much more breathing space to grow and to be interested in things. And, you know, to realize, oh, I'm a bit out of my comfort zone. But I'm going to do it rather than, fuck it, let's just do it. And then the next day, dealing with the decision you made that you don't remember making, that you would never make if you were sober, but you've now done it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to deal with it. It's a really weird concept because you jump in and you can't remember jumping in. And people say, well, you did this. And you're like, oh, that's so embarrassing. I would never do that.
Right.
But you did. So you've got to deal with the consequences of things that you would never do. And you sometimes can't remember doing. It's a very, very weird, strange thing to have to deal with. All that's gone. My drinking was like that. Definitely. You know, I keep remembering recently things that I did when I was drunk that I've not told anyone because I've tried to block them out of my mind. Mm-hmm. They're so embarrassing. I must have been so off my head. Scary. It's awful. Goodbye, good riddance.
Yeah. Really. I think that's a lot of what we're experiencing in year two is reflection. Yeah. For me, it's been a lot of work. Like sobriety has made it easier to do the work, like working on myself and helping myself improve in certain things, but it's still work. You don't get sober and then life just becomes super easy. Life's never going to be easy, but I think it's easier to deal with things. It's easier to identify things when you're not trying to run from them. It's not easy to face them head on, but we know that's what we need to do now. And I don't know, I feel year two has been, I want to say a setback, but it's not. It's a setback because I've really had to pause and take time to reflect. I think if I really sit and think about it, I have achieved things. It's just not as quickly as year one with like all the milestones and everything. And I think that's where we kind of get caught up.
I think you definitely have, Steph, because I talk to you every week. And I've seen you make decisions about things. We speak offline about things. You have definitely made massive changes in your life. And it might not feel like it, but I've noticed it. And it's a bit like you cycled up the massive hill in year one. And now you're sitting at the top looking at the view and you're not doing all that work, but actually you're contemplating. And your mind is working, but the actions aren't happening. So it feels different. But there's a reason you need to sit up there for a bit before you take off and go down the downhill trail that will be exhilarating. But you need to rest. It's a bit like that. And I think you're doing it very elegantly, actually, because you're not demanding change. You're not going, I need to do this. I need to do that. What's happening? I'm not making. You're just sitting there and you're thinking about your mindset. And those aren't things that you can go out and do. You have to sit and go, what am I really interested in? What's really changed? And sadly, you don't have a lot to show for that. But actually, it's as important as the stuff you can kind of put words to, I think.
And it's just reminding myself to like keep pushing. Honestly, alcohol was always just the easy way out, right? It was like a cheat code.
It's a cowardly way out, yeah. Actually. I'm thinking more and more, you know, because then I blamed alcohol for things, mm-hmm. for not thinking about things, for not dealing with things, for creating my mess. That's not living. That's not anything to be proud of. The chat with Gary is one of my favorites, actually, because mm-hmm. I just find his honesty, and he drank a lot more than me.
Yeah.
As we hear, he was drinking in the morning, and he got into a really bad place in his life. But to hear him talk about that has really inspired me.
Me too.
As well. It's given me that kind of extra boost I need at this stage to know actually it gets better and better.
And he's not the first person that's been sober for 10 plus years to say that to me.
Yeah.
So I love hearing, every time I hear it, I love hearing that where they're like, it just gets better and better. I'm like, it just keeps you like, all right, I'm going to keep going. Yeah. You know?
Well, we started off by asking Gary to give us a bit of history and to kind of go back in time and tell us a bit about where he was before he got sober. So let's meet Gary.
My early drinking days, wow. I was young. It was tragically young, really. I got into drinking when I was in my teens, heavily so. I knew that I had a problem when I was about 16, 17. I knew I was into it more than other people around me. They would just get into it for the party drinking and that was it. Whereas I was a bit deflated the next day that I couldn't just get up and do it again, that it wasn't socially acceptable. So I knew early, yeah. And I was a 90s teenager. So the two things that I loved were football and rock and roll in England. My team were really successful. Man United and Oasis were massive, my favorite band. And I just wanted to be part of that kind of glamorous drinking energy that was very typical in the 90s in England. And my God, yeah, I got stuck in big time.
I mean, we were the same sort of age, weren't we? Young. I was drinking at 14.
Yep.
You know, and it's such a common for people who get to the point where they go, I've got to sort this out. You rarely hear people who say they started in their 20s. It's that you start early, you think it's exciting, you can't wait to get started. And it makes you have to grow up really quickly as well, because I don't think you properly go through your teenage years when you start drinking that young, because it sort of stunts your mental growth in a way. And you focus on drinking and partying and you never really do those things that they tell you to do, like think about your career. It's like, how can I earn enough money to go out every night? That's the focus.
I find it interesting that you say at 16, though, you knew it was problematic. Like you already were seeing the signs, because I did not think mine was problematic for a really long time. I didn't see mine was problematic till the end. And then when I reflected back, I could see like when it started to get to a level that was problematic, but never did it cross my mind. So that's just really interesting to me that at such a young age, you already knew like this is not normal.
Yeah, I think that was hard for me as well, because I kind of crept into my 20s and I was an alcoholic. No question about it. When I got to uni, I was already a massive problem drinker. And I would say the first sort of 4 months, 5 months of uni, just the final nail in the coffin for the beginning. Do you know what I mean? It was, oh, I've got all this injection of money every 3 months and no one around to tell me not to. And I just went mad. And I never really managed to recover until I got sober at the age of 33. So yeah, it was really early for me. And I knew I had a problem. For me, the problem was accepting it.
Did you ever talk to anybody about it?
Not in my 20s. No, not really. I remember one day when I was about, I don't know, late 20s, one of my good school friends who lived in London, we were chatting one Sunday morning after another ridiculous weekend of, you know, behaving like an arsehole, and her saying to me, "You're an alcoholic, Gaz." And I just poured it out and just went, "Yeah, I know. I mean, it's been like that since we were kids, really." But I didn't really talk about it. No, I just bottled it up. It's not that I bottled it up. It's just I was too busy drinking and too busy living that hedonistic lifestyle. And I just talked to myself in bed on a Monday morning. You know, it was like all that rumination and it was very dark. It was a really dark time because there was no off switch with me. There was no, oh, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, so obviously I won't drink. For me, it was like, oh, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Certain pubs in England are open now, so it's an excuse if I'm not in the pub. You know, I would say 15 years of just drinking, thinking about drinking, thinking about the drinking I'd done, thinking about the drinking I was going to do, just drinking. And like you said, Kate, there was a huge gap in my life where I was supposed to do maturing and it never happened. Too busy getting smashed.
It's damaging. It really alters the course of our lives and our maturity, I think, because we're also having to deal with huge amounts of guilt, shame, and embarrassment at quite a young age when we've literally been children living with parents who have cared for us. And then we suddenly get this freedom and we're dealing with these very adult emotions that you kind of need to have a base to deal with. But we didn't, because we hadn't had enough life experience, and we certainly hadn't had enough good life experience to be able to balance that out. So the way you described it as heavy and dark, I completely relate to that. And I also felt, I knew I was a bad drinker when I was younger, because I would black out when I was 16, you know, and I'd be the one, oh, what's Kate done now? It was always me. And I was aware of that. You can't not be aware of it, because you become the butt of everyone's jokes. And then you start going, well, that's the jacket they've put on me. I'll wear it. I still enjoy it. And quite frankly, it's addictive, alcohol. You know, I can't say that I was going, oh, I'm going to drink again. I wanted to drink. And that's where sometimes I can't understand, when I knew the mayhem and the chaos and catastrophe that was coming, why did I keep doing it? I knew I couldn't stop at one, but I just kept going for 20 years. And it's crazy. It's a form of madness, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's those emotions that you're supposed to deal with as a young adult. There's those responsibilities that you're supposed to take hold of when you're young as well. And if you don't deal with either, suddenly, in my case, my life just spiraled out of control, really. I couldn't deal with the responsibility of being an adult. Couldn't deal with all the normal emotional regulation that was expected of me. So the further away I got from that with the drink, the more of a pipe dream it became. I just didn't think I was able to get any kind of foothold in a normal adult life. And I would just sit at my desk on a Wednesday, having not been to work on a Monday and Tuesday, because Monday I physically couldn't, mentally I couldn't on a Tuesday. So quite often I'd have the Tuesday convincer, you know, I'm really ill, I really am ill, promise. But come Wednesday, I'd sit at my desk and think, where is my life? What is my life? It's just a joke. You know, privately educated, only child, loving parents, grew up in leafy suburbia and had all these expectations as well from, you know, family that I'd do well in life and from myself, and thinking, I'm just a loser, like pathetic. And I really, that's how I felt about myself. I couldn't get a grip of it at all, no matter how hard I tried. So to answer your question, Steph, no, I didn't talk to anyone, and I should have done. The day I went to AA, I walked out, and apart from the relief and the catharsis of sharing my situation, I was really pissed at myself that I hadn't just done it so much sooner.
Was there a pivotal moment?
Yeah, there was. I'd broken up with my girlfriend the year before, and my drinking was a big reason of that. And my life just started to spiral down, down, down. It became like breakfast drink. I mean, I'd always drunk in the morning, but this was like hard, daily, strong AM drinking. So I'd had about a 9-month period of that. And then I'd had this blowout weekend. I was living in the south of Spain, and I had a blowout weekend, which I documented recently on Instagram. It was the final straw, not for me, but for other people around me, my friends, my flatmate, people close to me. And they were so sick of me that I thought, I'm just going to have nobody. So there was one particular Monday I woke up, my flip-flop broke. I had no money. I had no phone, no keys. And I was just lost in the hills of Granada. And I thought, right, I can't do it anymore. It's going to kill me. So yeah, there was like a crescendo, you know, it came to a head in the end.
But in fact, this is one of the questions I was quite keen to ask you, about whether you found any unusual support or resources when you decided to stop drinking, because we know AA and now there's a lot more out there. But was there anything that you found that really helped you through those first months? Because as we know, you're 10 years down the road now, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. But do you remember back and think, do you know what, that really was key to helping me stay sober?
I don't know if I remember it because it was a pivotal part of my life, or if it was because I'd actually didn't have any drink in my system, so I was able to remember stuff. But I remember the first 4 or 5 months of that period really vividly. And for me, and I wouldn't recommend it to everybody, but it's not a resource, but it was like an internal mechanism. I needed solitude. I'd been this character, external social character, for so long. And drinking was my life. It was my persona. And like you said about what's Kate done again, that was me. It was like, Jesus, did you hear what Gary did at the weekend? Oh my God, I can't believe you did that, mate. I was that kind of drinker. And I just needed solitude. I needed a break away from everyone and everything. And I needed to kind of re-engage my brain with normal thinking activity that didn't revolve around drinking. So I lived like a monk basically for 2 years. But a resource that I found incredibly useful was a woman called Tara Brach. She's a meditation guru and has a podcast, and some episodes are like short 20-minute meditations, but her other meditations are her speeches in temples. I think she lives in Southeast Asia now. And her podcast coupled with solitude and facing my demons really, really fixed me up in the first year. It was just her voice and her slow delivery. And she, I don't know, penetrated a part of my brain that allowed me to analyze and let go and like reshape my mind. Because it was just, it was in tatters really at the end. So yeah, Tara Brach, I'd recommend it for anyone that's wow. on their arm.
I relate to the solitude because, and actually it's something that I'm 2 years in, I'm still dealing with. I have no desire to socialize. But then there's this part of me that's like, you need to make friends. You need social interaction, right? Like we're told that all the time as humans, we need that. But I think because I've spent so many years socializing and drinking and pushing myself to socialize, I mean, half the reason I drank was so that I could keep up with the social calendar. And I just like, I just want my space. I just want to be alone. I want to be lost in my thoughts. I want to be lost in my healing. And so to hear you say, I mean, because you're 10 years in, so I'm looking at you like this little roadmap. And I know that everybody is going to go through their sobriety differently and hit, you know, different landmarks and things like that. But it's just hearing you say that's like really reassuring for me. Like being 2 years in, knowing that like it's not going to always be this way, because I'm guessing you socialize probably more now than you did in the beginning. But solitude is just like, it's so precious to me right now.
I think you have to take time for solitude to be able to look at why you drank. Because if you just put yourself in a social situation, A, you're exposing yourself to drink, which for me was a no-no. I really couldn't do that. And I knew that. And I just thought, well, maybe if I give it long enough, then when I do go back to that, and I did, like you say, I did go back to it and I became very social and I reconstructed my life and my personality and my, you know, I think I'm a gregarious, outgoing person, but I had to step back from that. And I rebuilt that in a classroom because I was an English teacher for 12, 13 years. And I slowly kind of reshaped my confidence that way. But privately and outside of work, I needed that solitude to just go, okay, let's just look at why. Let's look at what the future looks like. Let's look at your brain, your mind, who are you? Because I didn't really know, to be quite honest. I thought I was a rock star or a wannabe rock star. I thought I was, you know, the life and soul. I stripped it back down and thought, God.
But it's a bit like deciding to change your look. You have to take all your clothes off and look at your body before you choose the new items you want to put on to work out what's going to suit you. And you have to have time to do that. If you try and rush it, it's not going to work because you're going to make another mistake. And actually, it's such a huge deal to stop drinking when drinking has been such a big part of your life and it's become the main part of your identity. You know, I used to say, my friends, if you said three words to describe Kate, I would have bet all my money, every one of them would have said alcohol or wine. You know, and if you take that away, you really need to sit and then go, who am I? And you need to be on your own to do that. And a lot of people say that they were the life and soul of the party. And then suddenly they became very introvert and they realized they actually liked being on their own. But I think you really do need to sit. And whether that takes a month or, you know, years, it's a long process, but it's a really important process. And it is one I don't think anyone should try and rush. You know, what are you rushing for? We've missed so many years of self-development. We don't have any other hobbies other than drinking. For God's sake, take your time, work out what you like, work out what interests you and who you really are.
It's absolutely true. And then I think if you're a heavy drinker or a heavy recreational drug user, you probably have an addictive personality to some degree. And I realized quickly that I loved reinventing myself. Because my life, I was teaching English in Spain and I had the opportunity to work in a different city every year. So I would get a little bit more sober and more confident and get my swagger back and lose another stone. And then I'd move to another city and I could go to this new place. And everyone knew that I'd stopped drinking. It was like common knowledge all around Spain because all the teachers across the country knew each other or of each other. So I'd rock up to a new city and people like, oh, I heard you 2 years sober. Nice one. And I used to think, right, I'm going to be philosophical Gary in this place. I mean, not like an
I love it.
Yeah. I would have spent the last 4 months watching, you know, re-educating myself. I didn't have any kind of, I mean, I'm not stupid. You know, I did, you know, speak a couple of languages. I'm not an absolute moron, but I felt like one on topics that were a bit more highbrow. And I thought, God, I can't get involved in these conversations when I was a drinker. So I went on this kind of reinvention, recreation, just watching philosophy videos on YouTube and thinking, oh, I'm actually into this. This is amazing. I'm not just a one-dimensional tit, you know. So it was very refreshing. And it grew with every year, like my mental strength grew, my character came back. And I tell everyone that for me, the first year, I felt like I was a boxer who he had to just ride the punches and get his guard up and just take a beating until I could then come to, sit down, have a minute, and then go back up for the next round and actually learn how to fight, you know? Because like how you felt the first year for me was, my head was spinning every day. Every day. I was like, what is this? And it was pink cloud, black cloud, pink cloud, black cloud. So yeah, it was a wild ride. But like you say, you have to be patient with it. If you've been drinking most of your adult life and a lot of your teens, what's a couple of years to rebuild yourself? Because the payoff's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's worth those years. And solitude, I mean, I'm an only child. I love being on my own. Can't be arsed with people half the time. So it's quite welcome.
You're used to being on your own. I was just telling Kate earlier today, you know, it's just, you feel like you accomplish so much that first year because you are getting like your focus back and you can keep promises to yourself. Like even the smallest things that you used to let slide because you didn't feel well or you'd rather go drinking. For me, it was working out. Like I was able to stay consistent with my workouts for that whole year. And, you know, I did lose weight and all of those things that I was never able to do as a drinker. And when you accomplish like these big things like that first year, it kind of like sets this bar, right? So then like year two, you're going, okay, what am I going to do now? And I feel year two has been such a huge pause for me. There's been a few like setbacks in my health. There's been some like mental stuff that I'm starting to deal with. And it's just kind of like, who cares? Like how long it's going to take. Like I was drinking for over 20 years. Like, of course, this isn't going to, you know, cure itself or you're not going to feel like completely healed. It's enjoying that ride, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful ride. And there's like an exponential improvement in your life that's so good and it's so obvious. That kept me sober at the beginning, blagging my way through the first months and then thinking, oh, I'm learning about myself. Just seeing improvements in my life, my bank balance being healthier. And I thought, I can't let go of this. This is too good. But 10 years sober, I don't identify with that person whatsoever. I don't call myself an alcoholic. I don't think of myself as Gary that did all of those mental things in public and was judged for it. And it's just not me. So I totally wash my hands of that tag. And I would encourage people to lose that part of themselves because like, why hang on to it? What's the point? It was like a bastardized version of your true self that doesn't really mean anything now. So I'm like, yeah, later alcohol, I'm like, whatever. Okay, now I've got like a podcast related talking about alcohol, 8 content every day on Instagram talking about alcohol. But I don't actually think about alcohol when I'm thinking about the content. There's no temptation. I just think, right, I want to create a piece of content for 45 seconds on this and go into my memory bank for 20 minutes, dum, 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 done, out there. I've not wanted to drink for 4 years, maybe.
How have you changed between drinking Gary, first few years Gary, and the Gary of today? I think what Steph was kind of trying to say, and actually I feel exactly the same way, is that the first year of sobriety, there were so many firsts that it keeps you going, and that's exactly what you need. And it's exciting because you look better, you sound better, there's no embarrassment, you lose some weight. You're reaching all these milestones. Everyone's going, well done. And it's exactly the encouragement you need. But year two is different because you've done all of those firsts in that first year. And then it's just like, so I'm here. And I actually felt a bit weird when I hit 1 year. I remember thinking, ooh, if I was ever going to drink, it's going to be now because I feel like, what? So that's it now. No one's going to be clapping for me every time I get another day sober. I'm not going to lose any more weight because I'm a fine weight, you know. My skin's as good as it's going to be for a woman in her 40s, all this kind of stuff. So it's like, well, hang on. Is this going to now just be boring and normal? And that was my worry. And I think, Steph, that's kind of what you were saying. This year's been different. So we want you to tell us, and I know I started with one question, I'm kind of completely moving on to another one, but, you know, how it changes. And I want to know, and I'm hoping you're going to say it does, that it keeps changing and keeps getting better.
Let's analyze the first year. The first year is just whatever it takes. The second year, and maybe that's why you feel a little uncomfortable with it, Steph, is, oh, it's time to start dealing with stuff now. Because in the first year, I don't think you have time to deal with stuff. I didn't have time to deal with the carnage that was my life. I just needed to stay dry for 12 months. And then you start to deal with some of the outstanding issues. A lot of mine were financial, like frightening amount of debt. And I got to grips with that. So I started to realize I could feel my resilience building up and I felt like I had things to offer. So I attached more importance to that. Like I could be a bit of a mentor to people that were younger than me or a bit lost in life or struggling with a drink. And I felt like I could impart advice. That gave me more self-worth. And then I moved on to, all right, now I need to take on big life challenges that I'd neglected for, you know, a whole portion of my life. And that for me was a creative something, which manifested in some kind of, it was an English foreign language Facebook page I had, teaching slang to high-level English learners. Because I just wanted to have something that was mine, you know? So I wanted to have a side hustle. I wanted to travel. I wanted to do all these things. So I started to focus on them. And then after 4 or 5 years, I thought, I'm just a normal guy now. It was just pure relief, really, that I'd managed to stay sober for that long. And then there's always another layer of self-reinvention. It doesn't have to stop because you're sober. So I would say years 5 to 10 have been becoming the man that I should have in my 20s. And those things have been like, in my case, become a father, take responsibility, move back to England. Spain's like a fanciful idea forever, but your parents are getting older and you've got to face that and go and be there for them. So there's just ironclad resilience that builds up where it's not so much that you need to reinvent yourself, maybe. It's just that you can deal with anything that happens. And out of that, you become more self-satisfied and it's more fulfilling.
Basically start living without drugging yourself. And that's actually how we all should have been living when we were 16. That's the process of life.
Yeah, because I think I would admit that I am, still am. I've still got things that are lingering from 10 years ago that I haven't sorted out. I was 10, 15 years behind. But I had a beautiful like moment in my early 30s where I was able to reevaluate my life. I got sober and I thought, right, what do I want my life to look like? My students who are in Spain were like 22-year-old university students. They're like, Gary, do you think you'll ever have a midlife crisis? It's like, no chance. You know, I've done all the inner work that I need to. I know that my journey's not mapped out for me. It'll have loads of curves and I'm fine with that. So there's like an acceptance just to roll with the punches as the sobriety went on longer and just became a bit more old in the tooth. I thought, yeah, I can deal with this now. In recent years, those were the most satisfying experiences for me. And I will never drink again. I know that. That's just like forming this resilient mindset. So yeah, to me, it's just a mind game. I keep talking about it on Instagram, that it's psychological warfare. And it is at the beginning, you know, it's like frontline kind of stuff. And then it becomes people in offices plotting and planning. And that's how your brain, you know, because you're a bit out of it and you're looking back on it from a distance with a bit more wherewithal and stuff. It's beautiful. For a person who's been sober for 20 years, every day you think about having a drink. Clearly, there's some work you're not doing on yourself that you still think about it. But when I went to AA, it was an all or nothing. I need this. Otherwise, Christ knows who's going to help me. And I walked into that room and I was the youngest by 15 years, probably. And there were people still talking about how they need to go to meetings twice a week. And even then I thought, Christ, have you not sorted yourself out yet? You know, you've been sober for 20 years. I didn't get it. But I knew that I needed my people for a little period of time.
Yeah.
Just to hug me, hold me, and know that I could go and stand up and talk about myself. I love talking about myself. I love it. If I was chocolate, I'd eat myself. So all right, I'm a sharer, an oversharer. And yeah, I was just pleased to get it off my chest. So like AA is great for that. If you've got no one else, and I didn't have anyone else, all my mates had abandoned me. They were like, you're nothing but a liability. My poor flatmate, how he lived with me at the end was God only knows. My parents were in England, ex-girlfriend, who is now the mother of my baby, you know.
Oh, yay. Wow. There's the twist.
She was in England. And actually, when I rang her the day my flip-flop broke and said, I'm in a state, I need help. And I didn't know who else to call. I called someone that went through trauma because of my alcoholism. And she was the one that helped me. And then when I finally came back to England, it was because she asked me to. And now we have a child.
Oh, that is lovely.
I knew, like, as the years passed, I used to think to myself, what am I doing? How did I blow that? You know, she was my best mate. She was the person I'm supposed to be with. And, you know, I got lucky. She forgave me. You just never know what's around the corner, but you have to stay sober. I know that if I have one bottle of beer, I'd end up going on a 4-day bender. I know that. I know the chemistry inside my body and I know the mental makeup I have. I know that I have a chemical disposition to love drinking. Yeah, I can't risk losing all that. No chance.
I love the fact that he ended up with the woman that he broke up with. Oh. That to me is like a fairy tale. And it's like the ultimate story of sobriety, lose everything and then gain it all back. I was like, what?
It was the most beautiful plot twist ever.
I know. It was great. And actually, it just shows how your life can change and how you can make amends for things from the past if you show you're changing. And I always say that the biggest way to kind of apologize for your past is to make change in yourself, because you can say sorry and not mean it. You can say sorry and trip up again or do the same thing again. But when you actually change and you show that you've put the work in, and the people who you have upset must know all the hours you're alone, you're working on yourself, that is the biggest thing you can give them. If they genuinely care about you, that's what matters.
And it's such a good reminder, like he's 10 years down and now he's doing a podcast and on Instagram and stuff. And it's such a good reminder that our journeys are going to be so different, right? It's inspiring because, okay, here's the thing. For me, I am such a template person, right? Like I am black and white. Tell me the order and which to do things to get to my goal. And I think that's why I sometimes struggle with these things in sobriety, because I compare myself maybe to someone else's story or someone else's healing. And I'm like, oh my God, they were here at this time. Mm-hmm. And so for me, one of the things that I really feel like I have to focus on is letting go of the restraints of time. You know what I'm saying? It's the healing. Mm-hmm. It's the work. And he really inspired me because, look, I'm doing a podcast. I've already done the sober Instagram thing. Like, and he didn't do that yet. Right. And it doesn't matter. Like, it's still all. So, yeah. So that was just something that I really took away from it that really inspired me. And then, yeah, the fact that his girlfriend, who he lost in his addiction to alcohol, is now the mother of his child and they're together. And that just is so inspiring. It's like, it's not over till it's over, folks. Give yourself that space and that time away from alcohol to prove to yourself that you can have this wonderful life that you want. Thanks for tuning in. We're just two women from opposite sides of the pond striving to shed light on the negative impacts of alcohol. Quick heads up. We're not licensed therapists or doctors. If alcohol is seriously affecting your mental or physical health, seek professional help.
And don't forget to hit that follow button to catch all of our future episodes. If you think our podcast could make a difference to someone you know, share the love. And hey, leaving a 5-star review will really help the Sober Effect reach more fantastic people like you. So thank you.